This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gigi Shum, who is the Vice President and General Manager of Symantec Public Sector. Good morning, Gigi. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, John. How are you?
You know, I always go to a bunch of different events. I go to healthcare IT events. I go to big data events. I go to mobile events. And there's one theme. The theme for all of them is security. I mean, there's every single person out there has got security first. And then let's talk about, and then we'll talk about mobile. Talk about security. Then talk about the cloud. And then shared first. And any of the people I've gotten in here, from Vivek Kundra to, any person, Todd Park, I mean, that has to be part of the conversation. So if we're going to talk about security, you might as well get the big dog in here. Might as well get Symantec in and say, well, what's new with Symantec? And I think that's a value to my audience. But first of all, tell us about your background and maybe how you wound up working for Symantec, please.
Sure. Thanks, John. Glad to be here. So I've been in the IT business for a long time, in excess of 25 years. I'll just leave it at that. Started out early in my career at Sun Microsystems. Spent some time at Next Computer, Steve Jobs' company, little company before Apple bought it, and then went to Oracle, and then about 14 years ago went to Symantec.
It's running with the big dogs, huh?
It is. It's running with the big dogs.
And the theme was security in all three of them, wasn't it? I mean, it's interesting. My conferences and your past employers is security theme.
Absolutely. Well, you know, security used to be considered a necessary evil, but it was always the security guys who said no when somebody wanted to do something. But I think over the past probably 5 to 10 years, that image of security in organizations has shifted. And so now people really do look at it as an enabling technology. You mentioned mobile. If you're going to have mobile, you need security. Big data. How are you going to secure that big data? So it really has, I think, become looked at as an enabling technology to help organizations do more and do it well.
When you read the newspaper and the newspaper says, well, in 2013, more tablets are going to be sold than laptop computers, then you look around and everyone's got a smartphone of some sort. Symantec can't be sitting in the background saying, oh, we do antivirus. I mean, Symantec has to say something new. We got to get the smart folks working on it, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And we do a lot more than antivirus, right? What we do is we help protect the world's information and people, their identities online. And you bring up a great point, right? The tablets and the smartphones, they will outpace PCs. And so that brings great efficiencies and cost savings to customers, to government customers as an example. But it also brings new challenges in terms of securing those devices, and specifically securing the information that's on those devices. And so at Symantec, we think a lot about that and ways to do that better.
I ask each one of my guests later on the show about, you know, what kind of a notebook they have, what kind of a tablet they have. And a lot of my guests say, well, I just took my iPad and handed it to my 2-year-old and they were running with it. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I think if I were writing malicious code, I would like to hear that. I would like to say, okay, 8-year-olds having tablets, download an app, it's free. Well, hey, this is music to my ears. And Symantec saying, hey, let's look at this more objectively.
Yeah, absolutely. Great technology. Not only are our kids today starting younger and younger, but we're starting to see what we call the millennials, or sometimes refer to them as digital natives, right? People who have grown up with this technology coming into the workforce. And so, you know, those same kids who were playing around and playing games on a laptop or a tablet, now they're in our workforces. And they have expectations that they should be able to use that same kind of technology. In fact, they want to use the same device that they use for their personal use at their work site as well.
Many years ago, and I'm much older than you, but many years ago, there's this silly show called War Games or something. I don't, and they had like this big DOD DEF CON 2 and everything else. And I know Symantec's got some kind of a place like that in Virginia, too. Doesn't work and monitors a lot of different organizations. You can't tell me the location, but tell me just what it does and how it works with the federal government.
And I remember that movie, John, so I don't know that you're that much older than me at all. Yeah, we do. We have our Security Operations Center. We actually have five of them around the world, but our U.S. one is based locally right here in Herndon, Virginia. And we manage over 5,000 different customers' devices from a security perspective. So firewalls, intrusion prevention sensors, desktop endpoint protection software. And we help them learn. There's a saying that it's not finding that needle in the haystack. It's finding the needle in the stack of needles, right? So it's helping them to understand what they might be doing that might be putting them at risk, and if we are seeing attacks come in, letting them know that before it happens proactively so they can take action.
And the stack of needles is almost endless with petabytes of information, and guess what? It's changing. So you not only have to worry about stacks of needles, but morphing needles and twisting needles, and oh, by the way, here's a sewing machine next to it. So the idea of finding a needle in a haystack is challenging, and I think the idea of remote monitoring, it has to work for many organizations because no one can have enough sophistication to understand every implication of the latest app from Apple.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of big advantages. One is that we do it 24/7, 365 days a year, and most organizations can't afford to staff it round the clock, 7/24. The other thing, though, and you just brought it up, is that we have access to all the data that's out there on the internet worldwide. And so we're able to look at what's happening in a specific organization's network and then bounce that against what we're seeing across the world, across the whole internet. And it really does help us to spot trends way faster than any single organization would be able to do it.
I used to write a weekly column for the Washington Post. And when I wrote about security, I always call a guy named Peter Tippett up and ask about current viruses and virus threats. And he had that organization up in Baltimore. ICSA. But now that would be naive. I mean, I would call one person and expect that one person would know something about what's going on. Well, I'd have to call 5,000 people and say, okay, as of 11 o'clock in the morning, what's the current threat from Android devices? There's no one place anymore. It has to be remote and managed with a group.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think what organizations like Symantec do, we spend a lot of our time collecting and aggregating information across lots of different kinds of devices, lots of different kinds of sensors. And we're looking at spam and phishing and malware on mobile devices and traditional computers and critical infrastructure. And we take all that information and we aggregate it. And John, we publish a lot of it for people to be able to see and learn more about, too.
Yeah, and I've quoted the study. It's an annual study or report. What is it that Symantec puts out?
We annually publish the Internet Security Threat Report, and that's available on our website, www.symantec.com. And it's a wealth of information about the trends that are going on, what kind of attacks we're seeing out there, where they're coming from, as well as, how organizations can better protect themselves.
I wanted to take a break in just a couple minutes and kind of set up the next block. And I read an article in Forbes. One of the writers from Forbes went over to Russia and stayed at a hotel and came back, and his identity was stolen. And he writes this whole long article about woe is me. They're taking thousands of dollars from me, writing checks to bogus car repair places in Virginia. And he got some of the money back, but he came up with the top 10 security threats of 2013. Maybe we can distill it. I mean, the best person to ask is someone who's just been robbed. Hey, where the bad guys hang out? And he'll tell you. And I think this is we can go to that in a couple minutes. Another topic I'm going to touch on is this whole idea of mobile devices. There's a study came out earlier this year. It said that 50% of companies participating in BYOD have experienced a security data breach due to an employee's personal device. Boy, there are people going to be mad hearing that, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can talk a lot about that. But mobile devices and the whole concept of BYOD, we love the idea from the cost savings it brings and the efficiencies, the user productivity, but it does expose a greater threat landscape because now you have to worry about more devices, different kinds of devices, and devices that now have a mix of personal data and also the important work information. And so what at Symantec we recommend is an approach that we call information-centric security. So
you focus rather on the information than the device
on the information
or the person.
Rather than the device, right? Because in the old days, you used to be able to build a big perimeter, secure your environment, but now your data is just as likely to live in a cloud. It's just as likely to be on a mobile device. And so you really need to be able to focus not so much on the device. You want to protect that too, of course, but really to understand where the information is and to be able to protect that.
Yeah, the build a perimeter sounds has military overtones, but it's almost like the horse attacks in World War II. It's just it might have been a good idea, but the perimeter doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
And if it did, you'd have to change it every 30 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's take a break, bring back, talk more about top 10 lists from the Forbes article. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Vice President and General Manager of Symantec's Public Sector, Gigi Shum. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gigi Shum, who's Vice President and General Manager of Symantec's Public Sector. We started off talking in general about security and Symantec's and how they position themselves in the federal area here. One question I would ask is about this Forbes article. This gentleman was in Russia, and he got his identity stolen, and he talks about the top 10 threats. And the first threat he talks about is a targeted attack. The next day, I read an article about Mike Mullen. It seems like he may be onto something with targeted attacks, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that we found, I mentioned that we do this Internet Security Threat Report annually, and found a lot of the same things that are in the article that you were referencing. But specifically around targeted attacks, kind of an interesting fact there is that this year, the number of vulnerabilities went down by 20%. Yet at the same time, the number of malicious attacks rose by over 80%. So that means that even though software developers are doing a much better job of developing secure software, right, fewer vulnerabilities, the bad guys are finding more ways to attack. So attacks up by over 80%. And that's because of the very targeted attacks. The technology exists out there that they can, a bad guy can take one of these attacks, change a few bits or bytes, recompile it, send it back out as a new attack. And they do that and they target very specific people, organizations.
And the article was Mike Mullen. Everyone who is alive knows who Mike Mullen is, who retired from the federal government. Now, if you're an existing person for the federal government, Mike Mullen sends you an email, you're going to respond to it if you
sure.
know what's good for you.
Yeah.
And so there's trusted people. So the people went after Mike Mullen, the bad guys, and they said, hey, he's the guy. We want to find out who he's emailing. And they went after him, and they targeted him. They got him. I mean, that would be scary if I was considering retiring and I knew and everyone knows people in the federal government. And what are you going to do? Go to an island somewhere? You're going to communicate with your previous colleagues? And they went right after him.
Yeah. You know, and I think whether it's people or whether it's organization, I mean, our data shows that both the government and healthcare are two of the most attacked kinds of organizations. And you brought up Mike Mullen, and there are very specific high profile people who are targeted as well. And so it is a scary world out there, but we obviously don't advocate not being on the internet or not connecting. We just think you need to do it safely. And it's why, frankly, as much as technology is a very big piece of the answer, education and awareness is just as big a piece of the answer.
Most of the listeners who are consumers are probably at least starting to understand what apps can do, what apps can't do, and antivirus and secure precautions. But there are a select number of listeners who are involved in supply chain and supply chain management. And that's what the Forbes article talks about, too, is malware going after supply chain security. And you can think, oh, what's that? That's like tires going somewhere. No, that may be medical devices going somewhere. So,
sure.
And that's a whole attack vector that 10 years ago, well, who cares about the tires being shipped somewhere? People are going after that now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. You brought up medical. There was an interesting story that I read a few months ago that at a Black Hat conference that a good guy hacker, white hat hacker, hacked into an insulin pump just to show that it could be done, right, to demonstrate the vulnerability of these kind of devices. And so, you know, that's pretty scary stuff, whether you're talking about critical infrastructure, you know, nuclear power plants or electrical grid or somebody's, you know, pacemaker or insulin pump. Everything today is got electronics and is connected and is therefore vulnerable.
So each one of these tiny medical devices generates, guess what? Data. Mm-hmm. And it's fed to a storage facility and it all accumulates. And then we have people like Peter Sironsis from Department of Energy who talks about petabytes of data and quadrillion pieces of information. Wait a minute, petabytes of information? And so I always think that from a security perspective, all of a sudden, if you have, if you're a quarterback, you have 10 people coming at you, that's a threat. You have 100 people coming at you, that's even a bigger threat. So with big data must present big headaches for security companies, I would think.
It does. It presents big headaches for our customers and also for us. We've had to innovate around that, around things like targeted attacks, zero-day attacks. With the explosion of information and data out there, our latest version of our endpoint security has something in it that we call reputation-based security. And so what happens is we have, in kind of simple terms, a giant database of all the executables out there on the internet. And so when we see a piece of code come by that wants to, you know, let's say you're on Facebook, John, and you click on a link, right? It will automatically check before it executes any code and checks its reputation. And we check things like, have we seen it? How many other copies are out there on the internet? Where did it come from? A whole bunch of things we check about it and give it a reputation score, which then it'll either say, okay, it got a high score, it's okay to run on your machine, or it got a low score, no way.
Christmas season here, 2012, there's a movie out called Zero Dark 30. And when you said zero-day attack, I thought about Zero Dark 30. And there are listeners who don't know what a zero-day attack is. Maybe you could explain a little bit about what a zero-day attack is.
Sure, absolutely. So in the old days of combating malware out there, we used to be able to wait until we saw a specific piece of malware, what we would call in the wild, right, out there on the internet. We would see it. It would go after a certain number of machines. And once we knew that it was out there, we would develop a signature, right? And we would be able to protect against that. And most people were safe. But now many of the attacks use what we call zero day, which means that when we're seeing them, it's the first time we've ever seen them. Right.
And so what happens is the preventive action hasn't been designed yet.
Exactly. And so we had to shift to a way that we can figure out if something is malware without ever having seen it before.
So 700 new websites every day popping up. A malware writer could pop up johngilroy.com, attack a company, and close it up within the first 24 hours. And then security companies have to find out how to react quickly to a zero-day attack like that.
Happens every day. Happens every day.
From a mobile management perspective, I would imagine that Symantec must have an offering in that area as part of a big package. Or what is your play in this mobile area?
Yeah, good question. We do. We look at mobile devices, frankly, in the same way as we look at any other devices. They're devices that have information that needs to be protected. And so we have technology that helps you to manage your device. Right, because one of the things you want to think about with a mobile device is not just kind of traditional security measures like antivirus, although that's important, but you want to be able to manage the device so that you can encrypt it, you can change the password, you can provision software to it, you can wipe it clean if it gets stolen. So that's mobile device management, and we have a mobile device solution, but we also have something that's called mobile application management.
Now and we get to the
yeah,
real dirty stuff, I
think.
Yeah,
that's something that's really kind of new and not as many people are aware of. And that's where we really allow you to segment the data and the applications that are on your machine from your personal ones, right? We don't need to protect your version of Angry Birds or Words with Friends. But if you've got data on there that's either personal information that you don't want to be exposed, or information that's connected to your work, right? That may be, very, very important information. It allows you to secure and kind of wrap those applications and that data and protect them.
So what happens if you download an app and it's free And you don't realize that the app actually is collecting information on me and sending it to a third party. It's free. I think in this new age, the product is the person using the equipment. And so they want to know what my buying habits are, what my location is, perhaps other information about me so they can market things to me. It's just, it's uneasy. And I think with the proliferation of apps out there and devices, how can any federal manager keep track of anything? I don't know how.
Yeah, and I think really... The first step is understanding what information is important and needs to be protected, and what information as a government customer you don't care about. I used, you know, examples of Angry Birds. That's one of my husband's favorite games on his iPad, right? And so if I'm a CIO at a government agency, and I've got, you know, my employees have that on their machine, I don't really care about that. But what I do care about is, if they're working on, let's say, their employee performance reviews.
Or salary information.
Right? Or, you know, they're got email and that's got critical information about the work that that agency is doing that's related to its mission. That information needs to be protected.
I have to take a break. I'm going to come back, talk a little bit about email and social networks, and learn more about Twitter feeds that might be of value to you. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gigi Shum, Vice President and General Manager of Symantec Public Sector. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gigi Shum, who is a Vice President and General Manager of Symantec Public Sector. Talked about Symantec and federal agencies. We talked about zero-day attacks. A lot of my listeners listen online 6 or 7 months from now. I have listeners that just listen to SharePoint interviews, and some write blogs and read blogs and get information that way. And that's one great way to get information. If you want to read my blog, you go to Google, type in John Gilroy, and it pops up. It's right there. Or John Gilroy ugly, or whatever one you want to use to describe me, and it pops up there. Is there a blog that you read or something that my listeners can get better ideas of public sector information?
Sure, absolutely. I think the easiest way for your listeners to find it, John, is to go to Symantec's website. That's www.symantec.com. And then in the upper right-hand corner, just type in public sector under search. And that'll take you to our public sector page, which has got lots of great information, including our blog.
And the weakness with having 150 million blogs out there is that everyone's an expert. Oh, yeah. Everyone knows about this and that. And I think you really have to be judicious about the – and I'm very careful about the blogs that I read and follow. I'm careful about the Twitter folks that I try to follow as well. And I think I want to have a good public reputation before I'm going to give credence to – statements that they make. Speaking of public reputation, if you read Government Computer News, there's an article came out just a couple weeks back, and the headline is, Should Agencies Dump Email for Social Networks? Boy, that seems stupid to me, doesn't it? Or am I just naive in this whole area?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I don't like to knock progress, and there are certainly days that I'd love to dump my email, but I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon. I think social networking is great, and I think there are good uses for it in organizations. At Symantec, we use a tool that's called Chatter inside, and it's from Salesforce.com. It's a social internal social networking site that we use, and it's a great way to find out information. You know, every day I get my Chatter news feed, and it kind of gives me the highlights for the people that I follow, and so it's terrific. But I don't see it replacing email anytime soon. I really don't.
When large federal agencies, I'll have to keep this very generic, when a federal agency moves to a cloud-based email system, more risk, less risks, or it all depends how it's deployed. I mean, we see a shift in this general direction to the cloud, shared first, cloud first. What kind of risks involved in something as simple as email going to the cloud?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think when people started talking about the cloud and government came out with their cloud first initiative, a lot of people were concerned because, and the number one concern when you talk to people about moving to the cloud is the question of security. The truth of it is the argument can be made that the cloud is more secure or less secure. And there are people who will make those arguments on both sides of that issue. I think what I would rather focus on is what is appropriate to move to the cloud. That's the way I would, tell my customers to think about it. And then if you have decided that you want to move something to the cloud, some application like email, then make sure that when you're moving it, you're not abdicating your responsibility to make sure that the cloud provider is doing at least as good a job to protect that information as you would do if you had kept it in-house.
Well, one of the blogs I read is David Lithicum's in InfoWorld, and that's exactly what he says. He said, well, it's kind of like a knife. You can chop up carrots or you can chop your hand up. I mean, it's just a knife. It's just a cloud. It's not good or bad. It's just a device, and you can take your bicycle and ride 100 miles or crash into a tree. So is the bike good or bad? It's not the issue. Is the cloud good or bad? Well, let's step back and say, no, wait a minute. Are we confusing the issues with the problems here?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So dumping email for social networks, I'm not too enthralled with. I think email from a dedicated server to the cloud, that's probably going to happen whether we like it or not. And I think all federal agencies have to consider it, especially with the shared first and the cloud first strategy. And as long as... And I would think that Symantec would be playing very well in this whole area of the cloud and email as well, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We play in a couple of different ways. We have technology that if you are building a cloud, maybe a private cloud for a government customer, we have technologies that you can use to help you to protect and also to manage your information. And so a lot of customers use our technology and solutions when they're building their own private clouds out. But we also do have different Symantec security services that we offer that are software as a service or cloud-based services. So we have mail and web security offered either, you can get it on-prem with our traditional technologies or in the cloud. We've got backup either on-premise or in the cloud. We've got email archiving and discovery on-premise or in the cloud. So more and more, we are looking at the solutions that we provide and saying, we really need to be kind of platform agnostic about it. We need to be able to allow customers to deploy it on their premise, and then we need to be able to also offer it in a cloud-based methodology as well.
If you read what's going on in the federal government, Dell Tech has reports, and I read their stuff, and they look at certain key areas where there's going to be growth. Healthcare IT is one area. Well, guess what? There's going to be a lot of growth. And then all of a sudden, we have people studying healthcare IT and the security of healthcare IT. They talk about data breaches, and there was a study by Panamani talked about 94% of health organizations' data had been breached. I mean, talking about large number of organizations with data breaches. Now, this comes in the area of maybe information assurance or something, but that's got to be related to Symantec providing security for agencies as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And federal government, state governments, they're all part of healthcare, right? They've got healthcare providers and healthcare policymakers and healthcare payers in public sector as well as private sector. And we know that health IT is one of the areas that is most attacked by the bad
guys. And for the life of me,
there,
I don't know why, but it sure is. If you look at the numbers from hospitals, higher percentage now than 3 or 4 years ago. They're attacking healthcare data, which is just fascinates me. I don't get it.
Yep. And so, there's been a lot of, different malware attacks where they've exposed, where there have been data breaches and exposed, what we call PII, personally identifiable information about people.
Well, there's a presidential candidate, and I'm thinking now that was, he suffered from depression and all of a sudden didn't qualify him from running for the presidency. And maybe this is a subject that people are worried about being exposed, huh?
I think so. I mean, I think it's things like that. But also don't forget, John, that if you've got in your health records, in addition to information about your health, you've also got things maybe like your Social Security number or your credit card numbers. Those are often closely tied to health information. And so sometimes the information that the bad guys are going after isn't maybe that the fact you suffer from migraines or that you have diabetes, but instead it's your Social Security number or credit card numbers so that they can then use that to help empty out your bank account.
It's almost like instead of breaking into your house to get your credit card, they go through your garbage to get the credit card information from information that's not shredded.
Exactly.
In the same way, so they can attack the healthcare information in order to get personal identifiable information to go after your personal account.
Absolutely. That's a great analogy.
There's a connection. Never thought of that. So who cares what your blood pressure is? They don't care either.
They don't care either.
But it's a back door.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Tell me about the SANS Institute. Do you work with them or what do they do that's different from you? Or are they just a purveyor of information on security, or what do they do?
Yeah, no, we do work with SANS. They're really important to the security community. They've been around a long time. It's I believe it's the largest IT security training and certification source in the world. And they do great research. They publish a SANS Top 20, which are the 20 most important things that you should be doing to protect your information.
It probably melds perfectly with your information.
It is, yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot of crossover. We think the work they do is really valuable.
So they're not competitors at all, kind of different areas of information on security, where you may have tactical information, they may have strategic, or you may have both, or they define different areas there.
Yeah, and they really do focus on mostly on education and certifications. And frankly, we think there cannot be too much education around security out there. So we applaud the work that they do.
Especially with mobile, you know, that's the... Yeah. And anyone who has any information in that area, I have a daughter in college, and she has a friend who was a music major and decided to write an app involved with music, and he had to learn security about it. And then all of a sudden, Microsoft offered him a job for $75,000.
That's pretty good.
So he's
good,
the only one
it?
She knows who's got any money. Everyone else is broke except this kid who quit college, and he's in Seattle, and he's making big money because he was a musician. He wanted to learn about an app, and then he stumbled on security. Yeah. Maybe he had some smarts, and that knowledge is so critical.
It is, and you know, you bring up a great point, right? I think when you think about security, education is key, and particularly with areas about things like phishing and how to identify what's a valid email versus phishing. But also in this world of mobile, to the point that you just made, we've got all kinds of people who may be writing apps. They're not long-time computer scientists.
No one's got 20 years experience in apps.
They don't have
apps.
20 years experience. They haven't taken courses on secure coding. And so an organization like SANS that makes their information readily available can really help.
Yeah, I think Symantec should recruit at rock concerts or something. That might be the best place to recruit. Who's to know? We have to take a break. When we come back, talk more about Twitter feeds and more information on security. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Vice President and General Manager of Symantec's Public Sector, Gigi Shum. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gigi Shum, who's the Vice President and General Manager of Symantec's Public Sector. You can go to symantec.com, public sector, get white papers, get all kind of information. There's blogs there. And some people like to use Twitter, of all things. I mean, that's interesting. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Ray Gilray. What about Symantec? Where can they find you on Twitter?
Sure. So I have a Twitter account at G Shum. So it's at GSCHUMM. Or you can follow the entire public sector team at SymantecGov.
And I'm sure if you follow the team, you'll find out about this little adventure that you had with accidentally losing phones. Huh? Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about Project Honeystick.
Honeystick.
Yeah. A few months ago, Symantec did a little experiment. And so we purposely lost, in quotes, lost 50 cell phones in 5 cities and put them in high traffic areas like metro stations and things like that. And all 50 phones were found. What the people who found them didn't know was that we had put trackers on them so that we could track their locations. And we also had loaded 10 decoy apps onto each phone. So some, personal apps, and then some were, quote, business apps. So, and you know, some had title like...
Very deceptive here.
Yeah, you know, banking account information and things
and
like that.
So what happened?
So surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, 96% of the phones had their apps accessed.
Someone found it.
Both their personal apps and the business apps. And 96%, so almost every single phone had the apps accessed.
So the Honeystick Project, or what would I find at Honeystick?
Yep, Project Honeystick. And if you can just Google it, there's information on Symantec's website. But if you Google Project Honeystick, that you'll find it as well. And it gives you all the kind of statistics about what was accessed.
Wow.
The good news is that 50% of them did actually attempt to find the owner. So
that's good.
Sort of reinforces your faith in human kindness there.
My project is to ask all 290 guests the same 10 questions just to get a pulse of what your technology background is. And I'm going to ask you this. This is called the nerdometer test to see if you're a really hard-carrying nerd or not. So the first question is, when did you get your first computer? What year did you buy your first computer?
That's a great question. I would have to say it must have been in the mid-80s.
Ooh, that's not bad.
Yeah,
that's pretty
probably
good.
1985 or 86.
And you're your first cell phone?
I would say first cell phone, very close to the same time.
That's big points. That's
yeah,
really
probably,
big points.
Well,
and your shoulder still hurts from carrying it around.
Oh, my gosh. I was just going to say, to call it a cell phone is almost a misnomer. Because
and my
the
chiropractic
thing was so
bill
big.
Was expensive, too, that year.
You know, I remember, I think I paid $400 for my first cell phone, Ooh. And it was the size of a brick, and I had to get it installed in my car, the dock installed in my car. It bears no resemblance to today's
Very
cell phones. But.
And we know you have a Twitter feed.
I do.
And you do have your own blog?
I do. That's a blog that you can find on the Symantec website.
Good, good. And do you use any online personal backup services like, there's a lot of them out there, Dropbox, anything like that?
I actually am using, I'm a beta tester of something that is called Norton Zone. And it is, I'll call it sort of a secure Dropbox. It's something that it's not available for the public yet. But we are beta testing, and actually people can get in the beta if they want. And it's a way that it's got Dropbox-like functionality where you save your information to the cloud, but does it in a secure way.
Peter Norton is a name that users like me can identify with. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
An iPhone. And how many apps are on that iPhone?
Lots.
Lots and lots of
lots
apps.
Lots and lots of apps.
I don't know if that's going through my UNIVAC computer, but I'll put it in somehow. And what kind of tablet device do you have?
I have an iPad.
Okay.
And I also still have a Kindle because, I bought a new Kindle this summer because as much as I love my iPad and carry it with me and use it all the time, the Kindle works great when you're out in the sun. It's a great outdoor device.
And which social networking sites do you participate in?
I have a Facebook account, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Those are probably the two big ones.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic, definitely.
Well, you gained some points there. I'll have
oh,
to put
no.
this
Am
on my
I
computer.
A nerd? Am I a card-carrying
well, I'm gonna,
nerd?
I have a UNIVAC in my basement, and I'm going to print out some green bar and put in the U.S. mail and mail that report to you because that's how modern I am. It's always interesting to see, especially how security people would answer these questions. And did you choose that phone because of security? Because you work for Symantec, those earrings, did you choose those because of security? I mean,
yes.
You ask that question all the time because it's the bias you bring to it. Kind of interesting set of answers there. I've had people who say they have their own NAS in their own house. And they say, yes, I had an Apple with serial number 1234, and they can really get emotionally attached to it, which is always entertaining for some of our listeners, especially me when I listen to it. This is the part of the show where I get out a certified crystal ball, I put in your hands, and I have you gaze into the future and make accurate predictions about 5 to 7 years from now. And what's going to happen in the world of security? I mean, is it going to be desktops? Never seen one of those before. Laptop security, cloud. Where do you see this whole area, the whole idea of security heading?
Yeah, gosh, it's so hard to predict. I mean, 5 years ago, could we have predicted cloud and mobile and tablets and the explosion of data? So I'll give that as a caveat that I think it's really hard. But I think, we've seen a great accelerated pace of change, and I expect that pace of change to continue. So I do think the idea of mobile devices, they're going to be completely ubiquitous. I don't think it'll be long before the concept of a desktop device disappears. I mean, really, when you think about it, John, the concept of home phones, they're going by the wayside, right? My kids, they don't have a home phone in their apartment. They just have their cell phones. And I think it won't be too long before we won't have a desktop or a laptop computer. We'll have whatever portable tablet-like device, and we'll use that wherever we go.
Here's the serious question. Serious attack, vulnerability, United States government, September 11th. Do you think that's going to happen? Is that just something to sell novels and movies? Do you think we're vulnerable and getting attacked by bad guys in a more general area?
I think it could happen. I think that we've seen lots of different attacks. The Stuxnet attack that maybe some of your listeners heard about a couple years ago was really the first attack that we saw out there that went after critical infrastructure and did physical damage to a nuclear power plant. And so that was kind of groundbreaking.
And that entered through a phone system, didn't it?
It entered, yeah, and it attacked a piece of a device that's called a PLC, which is a part of the nuclear power plant. It's got a centrifuge in it. And what it did is it changed the codes that sped up that centrifuge that it would have actually exploded if it had been, if it had continued. So it's that kind of serious attack is absolutely possible, particularly when you get nation states involved in this cyber world and they've got sophisticated capabilities. So will it happen? I certainly hope not. I think our U.S. government is got a lot of smart people that are doing a lot of really good things to make sure that it doesn't happen to us.
And I think that that's the lesson today is that most agencies are seeing the threat landscape change and are reacting to it. At least they're trying to understand, well, what's Symantec doing to handle my problem with mobile devices? What's Symantec doing to handle the next device? Who knows what the next device is going to be? Is it going to be something you put in your eyeglasses, wearable computing? I don't know. And I think that it's just whenever you get a real large organization like a large oil company or manufacturing plant, it's hard to be flexible and change and adapt. And I think many of my listeners just say, oh, woe is me. I work for this agency. We're not flexible and quick. Well, no one is. I mean, it is really difficult to predict what's going to happen and change with that attack.
It is. And I know, you know, the government, I think they do a great job, but it is a challenge for them because the bad guys out there, the hackers out there, they don't have to play by the same rules. They don't have to go through federal procurement in order to get the latest technology. They don't have the same kind of organizational red tape as we sometimes impose on people. Even though it's often imposed for good reasons, it does sometimes slow the speed or the agility that with which they can move. But, you know, I get to see a lot of the great work that goes on, a lot of the smart people that are focused on this. And I'm really encouraged by the work that our government agencies do.
That's very discreet because you can't name agencies, but say in general, you're not pessimistic then. I think that that's been pretty good.
Yeah. I'm encouraged about those agencies
stuff too.
I can't name.
You have to be discreet about this and X out some certain people and organizations, but that's great. I have to end the interview here. We got about 10 hours more questions, but we're running out of time. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Vice President and General Manager of Symantec's Public Sector, Gigi Shum. Thank you, Gigi.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.